There's high-level talk of trade tensions leading to a new Cold War. I'm David Brancaccio in New York at a big meeting of Pacific Rim countries just concluded in Singapore. A key issue was the role of the U.S. and China in the region. Vice President Mike Pence alluded to China's growing influence. Pence said, quote, empire and aggression have no place. And there's the trade war. Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong said he's worried Southeast Asian countries will have to choose sides. The BBC's Singapore correspondent Monica Miller has been covering the ASEAN conference.
Well, you know, the one analogy I've heard a lot this week, it's like divorced parents. You have China and you have the U.S. and then you have someone like Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong saying, please don't make me choose. What do you do if you're one of the 10 countries that's a part of the ASEAN organization? You know, these smaller economies that really depend on China as well as the U.S. And if they divorce, it looks like we're heading down that road on a more permanent basis. You know, what happens to the supply chain that they've been able to build over the past decade?
Leaders of these countries are not embracing the alternate reading of this, that this is an intense negotiation right now, but perhaps the U.S. and China will ultimately bury the hatchet?
You know, that's the hope. But I think there's also a sense of reality, too, among the leaders of these nations, and that they can't depend on these two burying the hatchet, that they are going to have bilateral agreements. As China continues, you know, to be a power that they have to deal with and is pumping a lot of money into this part of the world, you also have concerns about the South China Sea. And they need the U.S., militarily speaking, not to pull out at this region and to protect them at this time. So it's a very delicate balance that these countries are facing.
The BBC's Singapore correspondent Monica Miller wrapping up her coverage of the ASEAN meeting, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Monica, thanks.
It's been my pleasure.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has announced that in addition to new restrictions on electronic cigarettes, it'll push to ban regular cigarettes with menthol, which are smoked disproportionately by African Americans. From WESA in Pittsburgh, Marketplace's Erica Barris has more.
Dave Chappelle had a sketch on his show called I Know Black People, and one of the questions was,
why do black people love menthol so much?
Because they were marketed to them. After World War II, cigarette companies were trying to figure out how to sell to a still segregated but new black middle class. They found 5% of blacks used menthol versus 3% of whites. So, says Philip Gardner, who studies tobacco use.
They said, well, we could use that little difference. They had different smokes for different folks.
That continued through the 60s and 70s. Cool in Newport advertised in Essence and Ebony, Cool sponsored black music festivals, and menthol cigarettes were cheaper in black communities. By the 90s, even Biggie Smalls was rapping about them.
Smoking mad Newports 'cause I'm doing court.
Today, nearly 9 out of 10 black smokers prefer menthol cigarettes. Andrea Vellante is a psychiatrist with the University of Vermont. She says a menthol cigarette ban will affect black communities.
You know, we would expect that they would be potentially less exposed to tobacco marketing.
And with blacks disproportionately affected by smoking-related diseases, that may be a good thing. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Checking the numbers, the FTSE in London is down 0.4%. Here, S&P futures are down 0.6%. The NASDAQ future down 1.3%.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Now to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where the biggest global gathering of engineering educators is taking place. Deans of university and college engineering programs, students, businesses, government officials. The theme this year is called Peace Engineering, as engineering schools consider ways to train engineers to consider ethics, social good, the biases and unintended consequences of the technology they build. Helping to guide the discussion, there is Elsie Mayo, a sustainable business consultant and founder of the Soul Branding Institute. Elsie, thanks for linking up.
My pleasure.
All right, let's start with this idea, peace engineering. This is an emerging definition. Give me a sense of what's behind that.
Well, the way that we've been holding it is thinking of it as the application of engineering and taking it to another level where the engineers are actually thinking about a more direct impact of what they can do on community well-being, on issues that address the problems that have been emerging with technology. And so it's about engineers becoming more activist, in fact, about the impact that they can have.
And this is a global gathering. You've seen that some other parts of the world outside the United States have cottoned on to this notion of peace engineering perhaps a little earlier than we have in the U.S.?
Yes. And I'm impressed with what I see in particular in coming out of Latin America, where they're not afraid to say our mission is caring.
A key question is why now? What is the catalyst? Do you think it's something about the very rapid march of artificial intelligence and automation? I mean, we're seeing huge advances in that area. Is there a connection with the renewed interest in this idea of peace engineering?
Absolutely. AI is the rest of the world, outside of engineering at least, is feeling it and characterizing it in many ways as an impending onslaught with a lot of fear about the dehumanization of our machinery, of our world, et cetera. And the engineering community that I'm seeing here, they're very sensitive to their responsibility because they are the ones, the decisions that they make as they are developing these algorithms will have built-in biases unless they do their best to address them. So in the old days, we used to say garbage in, garbage out. Well, bias in and then massive implications out.
Speaking from Albuquerque, New Mexico, where the big engineering education convention is going on, Elsie Mayo, who's a sustainable business consultant and founder of Humanity, Inc. and the Soul Branding Institute, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Redmond Carlipio. Our engineer is Brian Allison. Our intern is Ali Oshinsky. I'm David Brancaccio, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.